16. Fracky weren't bad when you got to know them. They had their secret language, even though they thought they talked interlingua. Thorby added a few dozen verbs and a few hundred nouns as he heard them. After that, he tripped over an occasional idiom. He learned that his light years as a trader were respected, even though the people were considered odd. He didn't argue. Fracky couldn't know better. H.G.C. Hydra, lifted from Hecate, bound for the Rim Worlds. Just before jump, a money order arrived, accompanied by a supercargo's form, which showed the draft to be 1/83rd of Sisu's appreciation from Jubalpore to Hecate. As if, thought Thorby, he were a girl being swapped. It was an uncomfortably large sum, and Thorby could find no entry charging him interest against a capital share of the ship, which he felt should be there for proper accounting. It wasn't as if he had been born in the ship. Life among the people had made the beggar boy conscious of money, in a sense that alms never could. Books must balance, and debts must be paid. He wondered what Pop would think of all that money. He felt easier when he learned that he could deposit it with a paymaster. With the draft was a warm note wishing him good business wherever he went and signed, Love, Mother. It made Thorby feel better, and much worse. A package of belongings arrived with a note from Fritz. Dear brother, nobody briefed me about recent mysterious happenings, but things were crisp around the old ships for a few days. If such were not unthinkable, I would say there had been a difference of opinion at highest level. Me, I have no opinions, except that I miss your idle chatter and blank expressions. Have fun, and be sure to count your change. Fritz. P.S. The play was an artistic success, and Louine is cuddly. Thorby stored his Sisu belongings. He was trying to be a guardsman, and they made him uncomfortable. He discovered that the guard was not the closed corporation the people were. It required no magic to make a guardsman if a man had what it took, because nobody cared where a man came from or what he had been. The Hydra drew its company from many planets. There were machines and bi-personnel to ensure this. Thorby's shipmates were tall and short, bird-boned and rugged, smooth and hairy, mutated and superficially unmutated. Thorby hit close to norm, and his free-trader background was merely an acceptable eccentricity. It made him a spaceman of sorts, even though a recruit. In fact, the only hurdle was that he was a raw recruit. Guardsman 3C, he might be, but a boot he would remain until he proved himself, most especially since he had not had boot training. But he was no more handicapped than any recruit in a military outfit having proud esprit de corps. He was assigned a bunk, a mess, a working station, and a petty officer to tell him what to do. His work was compartment cleaning. His battle station was runner for the weapons officer in case battle phones should fail. It meant that he was available to fetch coffee. Otherwise, he was left in peace. He was free to join a bull session as long as he let his seniors sound off. He was invited into card games when a player was needed. He was not shut out of gossip. And he was privileged to lend jumpers and socks to seniors who happened to be short. Thorby had had experience at being junior. It was not difficult. The Hydra was heading out for patrol duty. The mess talk centered around hunting prospects. The Hydra had fast legs, 300 gravities. She sought action with outlaws, where a merchantman such as the Sisu would avoid it if possible. Despite her large complement and heavy weapons, the Hydra was mostly power plant and fuel tanks. Thorby's table was headed by his petty officer, Ordnance Man 2C PB, known as Decibel. Thorby was eating one day with his ears tuned down, while he debated visiting the library after dinner or attending the stereo show in the messroom when he heard his nickname.
"Isn't that right, traitor?"
Thorby was proud of the nickname. He did not like it in PB's mouth, but PB was a self-appointed wit. He would greet Thorby with the nickname, inquire solicitously,
"How's business?"
and make gestures of counting money. So far, Thorby had ignored it.
"Isn't what right?"
Why don't you keep your ears open? Can't you hear anything but rustle and clink? I was telling him what I told the weapons officer. The way to rack up more kills is to go after him, not pretend to be a traitor, too scared to fight and too fat to run.
Phoebe felt a simmer. Who, he said, told you that traitors were scared to fight?
Quit pushing that stuff. Who ever heard of a traitor burning a bandit?
Peavy may have been sincere. Kills made by traitors received no publicity, but Thorby's burn increased. I have. Thorby meant that he had heard of traitors burning raiders. Peavy took it as a boast.
Oh, you did you? Listen to that, man. Our peddler's a hero. He's burned a bandit all by his own little self. Tell us about it. Did you set fire to his hair, or drop potassium in his beer?
I used, Thorby stated, a Mark 19 one-stage target seeker made by Bethlehem Antares and armed with a 20-megaton plutonium warhead. I launched a timed shot on closing to beaming range on a collision curve prediction. There was silence. Finally, Peavy said coldly,
Where'd you read that?
It's what the tape showed after the engagement. I was senior starboard fire controlman. The portside computer was out, so I know it was my shot that burned him.
Oh, now he's a weapons officer. Peddler, don't peddle it here.
Thorby shrugged. I used to be. A weapons control officer, rather. I never learned much about ordnance.
Modest, isn't he? Talk is cheap, traitor.
You should know, Decibel. Peavy was halted by his nickname. Thorby did not rate such familiarity. Another voice cut in, saying sweetly,
Sure, Decibel, talk is cheap. Now you tell about the big kills you've made. Go ahead.
The speaker was non-rated, but was a clerk in the executive office and immune to Peavy's displeasure. Peavy glowered.
Enough of this prattle, he growled. Maslin, I'll see you at 0800 in combat control. We'll find out how much you know about fire control.
Thorby was not anxious to be tested. He knew nothing about the Hydra's equipment. But an order is an order. He was facing Peavy's smirk at the appointed time. The smirk did not last. Hydra's instruments bore no resemblance to those in the Sisu, but the principles were the same, and the senior gunnery sergeant, cybernetics, seemed to find nothing unlikely in an ex-trader knowing how to shoot. He was always looking for talent, people to handle ballistic trackers, for the preposterous problems of combat at sub-light speed were as scarce among guardsmen as among the people. He questioned Thorby about the computer he had handled. Presently he nodded.
I've never seen anything but schematics on a Dusseldorf tandem rig. That approach is obsolete. But if you can get a hit with that junk, we can use you.
The sergeant turned to Peavy.
Thanks, Decibel. I'll mention it to the weapons officer. Stick around, Baslam.
Peavy looked astonished.
He's got work to do, Sarge.
Sergeant Lutter shrugged.
Tell your leading PO that I need Baslam here.
Thorby had been shocked to hear Sisu's beautiful computers called junk, but shortly he knew what Lutter meant. The massive brain that fought for the Hydra was a genius among computers. Thorby would never control it alone, but soon he was an acting ordnanceman, 3C, cybernetics, and relatively safe from Peavy's wit. He began to feel like a guardsman, very junior, but an accepted shipmate. Hydra was cruising above speed of light toward the rim-world Ultima Thule, where she would refuel and start prowling for outlaws. No query had reached the ship concerning Thorby's identity. He was contented with his status in Pop's old outfit. It made him proud to feel that Pop would be proud of him. He did miss Sisu, but a ship with no women was simpler to live in. Compared with Sisu, the Hydra had no restrictive regulations. But Colonel Brisby did not let Thorby forget why he had been enlisted. Commanding officers are many linkages away from a recruit. A non-rated man might not lay eyes on his skipper except at inspections, but Brisby sent for Thorby repeatedly. Brisby received authorization from the Exotic Corps to discuss Colonel Baslam's report with Baslam's courier, bearing in mind the critical classification of the subject, so Brisby called Thorby in. Thorby was first warned of the necessity of keeping his mouth shut. Brisby told him that the punishment for blabbing would be as heavy as a court-martial could hand out.
But that's not the point. We have to be sure that the question never arises. Otherwise, we can't discuss it.
Philby hesitated. How can I know that I'll keep my mouth shut when I don't know what it is?
Brisby looked annoyed. I can order you to.
Yes, sir, and I'll say aye, aye, sir, but does that make you certain that I wouldn't risk a court-martial?
But, this is ridiculous. I want to talk about Colonel Baslam's work, but you're to keep your yap shut, you understand me? If you don't, I'll tear you to pieces with my bare hands. No young punk is going to quibble with me where the old man's work is concerned.
Phoebe looked relieved. Why didn't you say it was that, Skipper? I won't blab about anything of Pob's. Why, that's the first thing he taught me.
Oh, Brisby grinned. I should have known. Okay.
I suppose, Phoebe added thoughtfully, that it's all right to talk to you.
Brisby looked startled. I hadn't realized that this cuts two ways, but it does. Huh. I can show you a dispatch from his corps telling me to discuss his report with you. Would that convince you?
Brisby found himself showing a most secret dispatch to his most junior acting petty officer to convince said junior that his CO was entitled to talk with him. At the time it seemed reasonable. It was not until later that the colonel wondered. Toby read the translated dispatch and nodded. Anything you want, Skipper. I'm sure Pop would agree.
Okay. You know what he was doing?
Well, yes and no. I saw some of it. I know what sort of things he was interested in having me notice and remember. I used to carry messages for him, and it was always very secret, but I never knew why.
Thorby frowned.
They said he was a spy.
Intelligence agent. Sounds better.
Thorby shrugged. If he was spying, he'd call it that. Pop never minced words.
No, he never minced words.
Brisby agreed, wincing as he recalled being scorched right through his uniform by a dressing down.
Let me explain. Know any Terran history?
Not much.
It's a miniature history of the race. Long before space travel, when we hadn't even filled up Terra, there used to be dirt-side frontiers. Every time new territory was found, you always got three phenomena. Traders ranging out ahead and taking their chances, outlaws preying on the honest men, and a traffic in slaves. It happens the same way today, when we're pushing through space instead of across oceans and prairies. Frontier traders are adventurers, taking great risks for great profits. Outlaws, whether hill bands or sea pirates or raiders in space, crop up in any area not under police protection. Both are temporary, but slavery is another matter. The most vicious habit humans fall into and the hardest to break. It starts up in every new land, and it's terribly hard to root out. After a culture falls ill of it, it gets rooted in the economic system and laws, in men's habits and attitudes. You abolish it, you drive it underground. There it lurks, ready to spring up again, in the minds of people who think it is their natural right to own other people. You can't reason with them. You can kill them, but you can't change their minds.
Brisby sighed.
Baslam, the guard is just the policeman and the mailman. We haven't had a major war in 2 centuries. What we do work at is the impossible job of maintaining order on the frontier, a globe 3,000 light-years in circumference. No one can understand how big that is. The mind can't swallow it. Nor can human beings police it. It gets bigger every year. Dirtside police eventually close the gaps, but with us, the longer we try, the more there is. So to most of us, it's a job. An honest job, but one that can never be finished. But to Colonel Richard Baslam, it was a passion. Especially he hated the slave trade. The thought of it could make him sick at his stomach. I've seen. He lost his leg, and an eye, I suppose you know, while rescuing a shipload of people from a slaving compound. That would satisfy most officers. Go home and retire. Not old spit and polish, no. He taught a few years, then went to the one corps that might take him, chewed up as he was, and presented a plan. The 9 worlds are the backbone of the slave trade. Sargony was colonized a long time ago, and they never accepted hegemony after they broke off as colonies. The 9 worlds don't qualify on human rights, and don't want to qualify. So we can't travel there, and they can't visit our worlds. Colonel Baslam decided that the traffic could be rendered uneconomic if we knew how it worked in the Sargony. He reasoned that slavers had to have ships, had to have bases, had to have markets, that it was not just a vice but a business. So he decided to go there and study it. This was preposterous, one man against a nine-planet empire. But the exotic corps deals in preposterous notions. Even they would probably not have made him an agent if he had not had a scheme to get his reports out. An agent couldn't travel back and forth, nor could he use the mails. There aren't any between us and them. And he certainly couldn't set up an end-space communicator. That would be as conspicuous as a brass band. But Baslam had an idea. The only people who visit both the Nine Worlds and our own are free traders. But they avoid politics like poison, as you know better than I, and they go to great lengths not to offend local customs. However, Colonel Baslam had a personal in to them. I suppose you know that those people he rescued were free traders. He told X-Corps that he could report back through his friends. So, they let him try. It's my guess that no one knew that he intended to pose as a beggar. I doubt if he planned it. He was always great at improvising. But he got in, and for years he observed and got his reports out. That's the background. And now I want to squeeze every possible fact out of you. You can tell us about methods. The report I forwarded never said a word about methods. Another agent might be able to use his methods. Thorby said soberly, I'll tell you anything I can. I don't know much. You know more than you think you do. Would you let the psych officer put you under again and see if we can work total recall? Anything is okay if it'll help Pop's work. It should. Another thing. Brisby crossed his cabin, held up a sheet on which was the silhouette of a spaceship. What ship is this? Thorby's eyes widened. A Sargonese cruiser. Brisby snatched up another one. This? It looks like a slaver that called on Jubalpore twice a year. Neither one, Brisby said, savagely, is anything of the sort.
These are recognition patterns out of my files, of ships built by our biggest shipbuilder. If you saw them in Jubalpore, they were either copies or bought from us.
Thorby considered it. They built ships there. So I've been told. But Colonel Baslam reported ships' serial numbers. How he got them, I couldn't guess. Maybe you can. He claims that the slave trade is getting help from our own worlds. Brisby looked unbearably disgusted. Thorby reported regularly to the cabin, sometimes to see Brisby, sometimes to be interviewed under hypnosis by Dr. Krishnamurti. Brisby always mentioned the search for Thorby's identity and told him not to be discouraged. Such a search took a long time. Repeated mention changed Thorby's attitude about it from something impossible to something which was going to be true soon. He began thinking about his family, wondering who he was. It was going to be nice to know, to be like other people. Brisby was reassuring himself. He had been notified to keep Thorby off sensitive work the very day the ship jumped from Hecate, when he had hoped that Thorby would be identified at once. He kept the news to himself, holding fast to his conviction that Colonel Baslam was never wrong, and that the matter would be cleared up. When Thorby was shifted to combat control, Brisby worried when the order passed across his desk. That was a security area, never open to visitors. Then he told himself that a man with no special training couldn't learn anything there that could really affect security, and that he was already using the lad in much more sensitive work. Brisby felt that he was learning things of importance, that the old man, for example, had used the cover personality of a one-legged beggar to hide two-legged activities, but had actually been a beggar. He and the boy had lived only on alms. Brisby admired such artistic perfection. It should be an example to other agents. But the old man always had been a shining example. So Brisby left Thorby in combat control. He omitted to make permanent Thorby's acting promotion in order that the record of change in rating need not be forwarded to by personnel. But he became anxious to receive the dispatch
that would tell him who Thorby was. His executive was with him when it came in. It was in code, but Brisby recognized Thorby's serial number. He had written it many times in reports to X-Corps.
"Look at this, Stinky. This tells us who our foundling is. Grab the machine, the safe is open."
10 minutes later, they had processed it. It read,
"Null result. Full ident search, Vaslim Thorby, Guardsman 3rd. Authority and dirt transfer any receiving station. Retransfer Hecate investigation. Disposition. Chief Buppers."
"Stinky, ain't that a mess?"
Stanky shrugged. "It's how the dice roll, boss."
"I feel as if I had let the old man down. He was sure the kid was a citizen."
"I misdoubt there are millions of citizens who would have a bad time proving who they are. Colonel Baslam may have been right, and still it can't be proved."
"I hate to transfer him. I feel responsible."
"Not your fault."
"You never served under Colonel Baslam. He was easy to please. All he wanted was 100% perfection, and this doesn't feel like it."
"Quit blaming yourself. You have to accept the record."
"Well, might as well get it over with.
Betty, I want to see Ordnanceman Baslam." Thorby noticed that the skipper looked grim, but then he often did. "Acting Ordnanceman 3rd Class Baslam reporting, sir."
"Thorby?"
"Yes, sir." Thorby was startled. The skipper sometimes used his first name because that was what he answered to under hypnosis, but this was not such a time.
"The identification report on you came."
"Huh?" Thorby was startled, out of military manners. He felt a surge of joy. He was going to know who he was.
"They can't identify you."
Brisby waited, then said sharply,
"Did you understand?"
Thorby swallowed. Yes, sir. They don't know who I am. I'm not anybody."
"Nonsense, you're still yourself."
"Yes, sir." "Is that all, sir? May I go?"
"Just a moment. I have to transfer you back to Hecate,"
he added hastily, seeing Thorby's expression.
"Don't worry. They'll probably let you serve out your enlistment if you want to. In any case, they can't do anything to you. You haven't done anything wrong."
"Yes, sir," Thorby repeated, dully. "Nothing and nobody." He had a blinding image of an old, old nightmare. Standing on the block, hearing an auctioneer chant his description, while cold eyes stared at him. But he pulled himself together and was merely quiet the rest of the day. It was not until the compartment was dark that he bit his pillow and whispered brokenly, "Pup. Oh, Pup." The guard's uniform covered Thorby's legs, but in the showers the tattoo on his left thigh could be noticed. When this happened, Thorby explained without embarrassment what it signified. Responses varied from curiosity through half-disbelief
to odd surprise that here was a man who had been through it.
Capture, sale, servitude, and miraculously free again. Most civilians did not realize that slavery still existed. Guardsmen knew better. No one was nasty about it. But the day after the null report on identification, Thorby encountered Decibel Peeby in the showers. Thorby did not speak. They had not spoken much, since Thorby had been moved out from under Peeby, even though they sat at the same table. But now Peeby spoke.
"Hey, traitor!"
"Hi." Thorby started to bathe.
"What's on your leg, dirt?"
"Where?"
"On your thigh. Hold still, let's see."
"Keep your hands to yourself."
"Don't be so touchy. Turn round to the light. What is it?"
"It's a slaver's mark," Thorby explained, curtly.
"No fooling. So you're a slave?"
"I used to be."
"They put chains on you, make you kiss your master's foot?"
"Don't be silly."
"Look who's talking. You know what, traitor boy? I heard about that mark, and I think you had it tattooed yourself to make big talk. Like that one about how you blasted a bandit ship."
Thorby cut his shower short and got out. At dinner, Thorby was helping himself from a bowl of mashed potatoes. He heard Peeby call out something, but his ears filtered out Decibel's endless noise. Peeby repeated it.
"Hey, slave, pass the potatoes. You know who I mean. Dig the dirt out of your ears."
Thorby passed him the potatoes, bowl and all, in a flat trajectory. open face of the bowl plus potatoes making perfect contact with the open face of Decibel. The charge against Thorby was assaulting a superior officer, the ship then being in space in a condition of combat readiness. Peavy appeared as complaining witness. Colonel Brisby stared over the masked desk, and his jaw muscles worked. He listened to Peavy's account.
I asked him to pass the potatoes, and he hit me in the face with them.
That was all?
Well, sir, maybe I didn't say please, but that's no reason—
Never mind the conclusions. The fight go any farther?
No, sir, they separated us.
Very well. Paslam, what have you to say for yourself?
Nothing, sir.
Is that what happened?
Yes, sir. Brisby stopped to think, while his jaw muscles twitched.
He felt angry, an emotion he did not permit himself at mast. He felt let down. Still, there must be more to it.
Instead of passing sentence, he said,
Step aside. Colonel Stanky?
Yes, sir.
There were other men present. I want to hear from them.
I have them standing by, sir.
Very well.
Thorby was convicted. 3 days, bread and water. Solitary. Sentence suspended. 30 days probation. Acting rank stricken. Decibel Peavy was convicted. Court trial waived when Brisby pointed out how the book could be thrown at him.
Of inciting to riot specifications, using derogatory language with reference to another guardsman's race, religion, birthplace, or condition previous to entering service, the ship then being, etc.
Sentence, 3 days, bread and water, solitary, suspended. Reduction 1 grade, 90 days probation, in reference, bread and water, solitary, only. The colonel and vice-colonel went back to Brisby's office. Brisby was looking glum. Mast upset him at best. Stanky said, Too bad you had to clip the Baslam kid. I think he was justified.
Of course he was. But inciting to riot is no excuse for riot. Nothing is.
Sure, you had to, but I don't like that Peavy character. I'm going to make a careful study of his efficiency marks.
Do that. But confound it, Stinky. I have a feeling I started the fight myself.
Huh?
2 days ago, I had to tell Baslam that we hadn't been able to identify him. He walked out in a state of shock. I should have listened to my psych officer. The lad has scars that make him irresponsible under the right... the wrong stimulus. I'm glad it was mashed potatoes and not a knife.
Oh, come now, boss. Mashed potatoes are hardly a deadly weapon.
You weren't here when he got the bad news. Not knowing who he is hurts him.
Stanky's pudgy face pouted in thought.
Boss, how old was this kid when he was captured?
Chris thinks he was about 4.
Skipper, that backwoods place where you were born, at what age were you fingerprinted, blood-typed, retina photographed, and so forth?
Why, when I started school.
Me too. I'll bet they wait that long most places.
Brisby blinked.
That's why they wouldn't have anything on him.
Maybe. But on Riff, they take identity on a baby before he leaves the delivery room.
My people too, but...
Sure, sure. It's common practice, but how?
Brisby looked blank, then banged the desk.
Footprints! And we didn't send him in!
He slapped the talkie.
Eddie, get Baslam here on the double.
Thorby was glumly removing the chevron he had worn by courtesy for so short a time. He was scared by the peremptory order. It boded ill, but he hurried. Colonel Brisby glared at him.
Baslam, take off your shoes.
Sir?
Take off your shoes!
Brisby's dispatch, questioning failure to identify and supplying bypurse with footprints, was answered in 48 hours. It reached the Hydra as she made her final approach to Ultima Thule. Colonel Brisby decoded it when the ship had been secured dirtside. It read, Guardsman Thorby Baslam identified missing person Thor Bradley Rudbeck. Terra, not Hecate. Transfer Rudbeck, fastest Millercom. Terra, discharge. Arrival next kin notified. Repeat, fastest. Chief Buppers. Brisby was chuckling.
Colonel Baslam is never wrong. Dead or alive, he's never wrong.
Boss?
Huh?
Read it again. Notice who he is?
Brisby reread the dispatch. Then he said in a hushed voice, Why do things like this always happen to Hydra?
He strode over and snatched the door.
Eddie!
Thorby was on beautiful Ultima Thule for 2 hours and 27 minutes.
What he saw of the famous scenery after coming 300 light-years was the field between the Hydra and guard mail courier Ariel.
3 weeks later, he was on Terra.
He felt dizzy.